you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now. Wake up! Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
I don't know that it's still possible, but there are 18 games left. The Cubs are relevant in September.
Do you remember the very first night of Craig Tember?
Yeah, I think the pitching matchup is the reason to watch Chota making significantly less money and significantly more impact. Yamamoto's doing fine. I just love what Chota has done, and he's become kind of a favorite. The guy you love to kind of watch, and maybe he wants to show the Dodgers something too.
Hey, Chicago, what do you say? Cubs gonna win today.
And I think that now I'm kind of curious. Do something special. Do the special, Craig Counsell. Do the special.
If you're gonna be a playoff team, you're gonna play really critical games in September every year.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
That's just baseball, unfortunately.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Woohoo, everybody. Woohoo. I mean, Earth, Wind, and Fire, they're doing a new song. It's called Craig Tember. Don't tell Destino.
Morning, Mully. Happy Wednesday. Wow.
It's a thing.
People that stayed up for that. PC, amazing.
Wow, was he good?
Yes, he was. Yes, yeah. He is. And this is fun. Found myself a little bit wistful, actually, this morning, finding out the Cubs won the way they won. A little bit wistful to think that there are only potentially 17 games left. I don't want this to end. I don't want Craig Tember to end.
Yeah.
This is fun right now.
It's a thing today. Yeah, they won out there again.
So
how about that moment?
6-3.
Greatest moment in the game when Chota gives the little tip of the cap. And there's
Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani, tip of the cap.
Well, that was a great moment.
Come on, man.
It was a great moment.
That's the world in a nutshell.
Wasn't the greatest moment as things would turn out unfold.
There were better moments ahead.
That was the most respectful moment. That was definitely two Japanese stars showing reverence for each other.
It's a cultural moment.
Buddy. And then PCA made three catches, Mully, that are... When we talk about doing the special, he did the special.
I got a text from a buddy of mine. I woke up to it that Dustin right about PCA.
Dustin was right about PCA. And I think that all those things about earlier in the year when he was struggling, when he was clearly overmatched, and I referred to him as PC AAA, I take those back. All of it.
And And it took... A whole season, it took a Craig Tember. Say it, Dustin. You were wrong about that.
Well,
so Dustin, not exactly.
He's not wrong.
No.
He's
wrong. I'm not wrong about Craig Tember.
He's not wrong yet about Craig Tember.
He's wrong. I said
there's been Craig Tember. There's never been Craig Tober. That's what I said. I never said there was no such thing.
He just jumped in yelling at 5:30.
You invited that.
We tried. No,
you poked and prodded.
We tried to give the guy a little respect.
Listen.
And then he takes a mile.
Let's just say you baited him, and I know what that looks like. You baited him, and he jumped in.
He did. Okay. He took the bait.
So Cubs win 6-3 out in L.A., two in a row against the Dodgers, four out with 17 to go. I don't want this season to end. This is getting exciting now. Talk me out of this, because I'm starting to wonder, given the schedule, if they sweep today.
Come on.
Is anything possible?
Say it. Just say it.
Could they make a run?
Yeah, I mean, listen.
It's fun.
Anything's possible!
Thank you. I'm wondering.
There we go.
I'm starting to wonder. The PCA robbed a home run. He drove in two and he saved two, at least two runs last night.
He was excellent, and it was the late home run he stole, and he did go up and get it.
Last out of the game.
Porter Hodge. I mean, I'm just saying, that is super cool stuff, and I don't know anybody that isn't enjoying that. Seriously.
I think you're right.
It's just really fun.
It was also very cool because they're in Southern California. That's where he grew up.
Sure.
He used to go to Dodger Stadium as a kid, as he talked about after the game. Now, he wasn't a Dodger fan per se, but he was somebody that dreamed of being a major leaguer, making the kind of plays that he made last night in his own backyard. That was fun. The Cubs get good enough pitching from Imanaga, and today they go for the sweep with Jordan Wicks. If they do, then maybe we'll be, you know, talking about the possibility. If they gain another game on the Mets and the Braves, that would be three out with 16 to go. Then you can do the math a little bit easier.
Yeah, listen, it is a very unlikely thing to kind of wait for and hope for.
I know.
And really, it has nothing to do with what's happening right now. It has to do what happened in a couple of months, earlier in the season, a couple of really bad months. And there's no way around that. And so you put yourself in a bad position and you feel like it's still exciting. It's still fun to see. I'd love to see him get the sweep just because it's the Dodgers. It underscores the away form of this team versus the hell of playing at Wrigley, which apparently is a real thing.
Apparently it's a thing.
We talked about it.
Yeah, Ian Happ talked about it yesterday on the midday show. We'll get into that later. I think you're right. I also wonder, you tell me, is it partly also because a game like last night, the joy with which Pete Crow Armstrong plays, he is somebody whose enthusiasm makes you want to watch more when he makes plays and celebrates and he's bouncing around and he's just got this childlike enthusiasm that is contagious.
No, I think it's just that he's really good.
Okay.
I'm not being mean. I'm just saying, if he was doing that and he wasn't making the plays, I mean, it would be kind of
if he was nonchalant about it, do you think it would have a different impact?
I wonder if that would be cooler. I don't know. But I think the plays are the thing.
The reaction is the thing. The reaction is something else though too. He is bouncing around. He even got Craig Counsell to talk about him in such a positive way. And I have been watching and wondering and waiting almost.
Okay.
I have not always thought that Craig Counsell was the biggest PCA guy all season long. And maybe if you're the manager of a player who struggled and basically was developing at the major league level, I understood it. Last night, I think, though, he won everybody over. That was a huge game. That was the PCA game.
That was a PCA game. You know, what was extraordinary is the way they came back and the five-run inning and the way that they kind of stymied the Dodgers after that.
Good word.
That was really
excellent word.
That was really an excellent performance. And after they won the first game in the series, you did have that kind of, okay, they scored the runs. Now what do they have? Well, guess what? They scored half those runs in one inning late and won the game 6-3. Pretty spectacular.
So there was a moment on the mound with Porter Hodge in the ninth that was described in the stories that I read, wasn't a part of the highlights, and obviously we weren't able to stay up for all of the game, but he had a shortness of breath or he felt his heart racing and they had to come to the mound. We need to find out more about that because that's a scary moment for a guy.
Said it's happened to him before. This is not the first time that's happened.
Oh, was it a panic attack or more
the excitement of the game. He gets himself so worked up that he starts feeling it.
That's extraordinary, really, to acknowledge and also to brush off. Huh. How do you suddenly gather yourself and the manager feel okay about a guy who loses his?
You should ask Dustin. He has about four of those a game.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a show.
No. I'm just saying he gets very rambunctious.
See that look he gave me?
I was joking around with him. I can't win. I started out by telling you I got a buddy texting me that Dustin was right in his PCA 2020. What year was it? 27?
Well, my prediction is going to be PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong. So a Cubs outfielder will be the biggest star in Chicago by the year 2028.
That was before Bedard arrived.
28.
I also think this, in all seriousness,
yep.
we have talked all season long about what the Cubs have lacked in terms of star power. They yep. don't have a star in the lineup.
Right.
It is very potentially premature and an overreaction. But if they have anybody in their lineup that is capable of being a star, it is PCA.
Yeah. Move him up in the lineup. All that will come.
If he's leading off next year and he's hitting 297 instead of 247, which his average has risen to, and he's doing all the right things, he has star potential.
Okay. That's fair.
He's put himself in a position as we sit here in September to consider himself a future star again.
He's a riveting player, and he is as you say, a big energy guy. And you get to this point in the season, and he's got those 22-year-old legs.
He does.
Right?
Well, and his are healthy.
Yeah, unlike Roman Jose, who came up at the 22.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Did I just quote Taylor Swift?
You did.
Well, I don't think that's allowed.
I don't think we're supposed to do that this
morning.
Away from that stuff. But you quoted one of her lyrics.
Thank you, buddy.
Not one of her posts.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. I beg your pardon.
Jordan Wicks, Bobby Miller tonight in the finale at Dodger Stadium. 9:10 again. First pitch right here on the Score.
They won't move it up. You think they'd say, this is really what's happening is really cool. We got to move this up.
Can they not have a getaway day in L.A.? Don't they have a getaway day on a Wednesday?
Hmm.
So we have to stay up to watch this.
Back in session, David.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Oh, well. I'm going to miss the Cubs. I'm already to the point. I love the NFL. You know I'm immersed in college football, all the football things all the time. But when the Cubs win a couple in Dodger Stadium, it gets me a little giddy. I'm going to miss them when they're gone.
Well, they really needed this. For the reasons that you're kind of saying, I mean, after the Yankee series and the two runs over three games, it's kind of a miraculous they won a game with that kind of run output. Then to go out there and 16 runs in a couple of games, come on. Who doesn't like that?
And you're right. You opened up talking about the moment with Ohtani and Imanaga.
Beautiful.
And then you had Yamamoto striking out the side. And that was Suzuki with a big hit in this game for the Cubs. It was a Japanese baseball showcase.
Jed going to see Roki.
Huh? We got to talk about Jed. We got to talk about Jed at the pick six. Interesting stuff reported about Jed Hoyer in the Cubs front office. Raises an eyebrow.
Things that make you say,
There's a lot of that going on.
There is.
A lot of that going on.
All over the world.
Bears back to practice today.
Thank God.
Thank goodness.
Sorry. I just need to move on with that game. Get going. Let's start.
I wanted to pass over the White Sox. You got shut out for the 17th time. I think you want to address that.
No. I mean, let's talk about the Sox. Let's talk about the great job they've done. And I wonder if...
You know, I was really surprised they've been shut out 17 times. I didn't expect that.
Is Chris Getz surprised? I wonder.
By 17 shutouts?
No, by 113 losses.
80 games under 500? Think about that.
Yeah.
You are 80 games under 500. You could win 40 in a row and still be 40 games under 500.
Grady Sizemore's been worse than the first manager.
But his press conferences are better.
They are.
Yeah.
And he defends his players more than the Cubs manager.
Are we really referring to that guy as the first manager?
Former manager.
I wasn't sure if I was allowed to say Pedro Grifol's name.
Yeah,
I just did.
That's no gentleman. That's the manager.
Skipper, yeah. The first skipper.
Oh,
this year.
There you go.
I'm being nice to you, too.
No,
stop that.
You tried to defend him.
I
see
did.
What you get?
I know. Man. Oh, wow.
Oh, goodness gracious. So, anyway, a lot of fun. It'll be good to see an injury report and to start talking about the Bears and what happens moving forward. Are we anticipating, how many receivers are we anticipating being on the injury report would be one way of looking at it.
You're getting encouraging rumors.
Yeah.
You're seeing some references to, it's day-to-day rather than week-to-week and all of these things that make you wonder if they're going to have Roma Dunze on the trip to Houston. Maybe we will find out more today in terms of clarity, the MRI results that maybe they'll discuss. I go back to what we talked about yesterday. Don't be in a hurry.
Well, I kind of hope he doesn't play, but I do want him all padded up Russ style.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
I'm just joking.
You just wanted
around.
To poke fun at Russ.
I don't want to
this
poke
is, this
fun
is really
him.
Getting me a little nervous, though, when
yeah.
we talk about Russ, because I have Russell Wilson starting more than Justin Fields.
Oh, no.
And, well.
Because you're hoping for a worse
no,
draft
we pick. Go back. We had, well, I shouldn't remind you. We did have a little bit of either a wager or a disagreement over who was going to start more.
Really?
Don't you remember we said?
What did we bet? Do I owe Dustin something? He
no.
keeps claiming I owe him.
Dustin, didn't I say that Russell Wilson was going to start more than Justin Fields? And Mully, you said, no, we need the Bears need the draft
yeah,
pick. And
they do need
we're cheering for Justin Fields to start more.
I yes. wasn't.
You never.
No, I just think objectively, I look at Russell Wilson's 2023 output and people overlook the fact that he had 26 touchdowns and 8 interceptions.
Yeah. He's also,
if he's healthy, he's a better choice, in my opinion.
And he's also washed.
Well,
in my
that's opinion. Your opinion.
I know.
But that's now I think that the longer Justin Fields is the starter in Pittsburgh, if they continue to win ugly, no matter if he keeps winning, he keeps playing.
Well, you would imagine so, but it does seem like Mike Tomlin sort of wants the other guy starting.
He has left the door open.
Yes.
But I also think Mike Tomlin is a pragmatist. He's a football practical thinker. If they continue to win, I don't care if it's 6 field goals. I don't know if they kick, you know, 2 safeties and 4 field goals. Whatever the math, if they win, I think he'll stick with Justin Fields.
As I sit here today, we're preparing as if Justin is going to be our quarterback. I think that's the appropriate way to do it. Speculation is a waste of time. Russell's hurt. He's not available to us. And so, as you guys know, as a general practice, man, I focus my energy on those that are available and their readiness.
And it does seem as if, as he says that, he's also there's also this kind of, the minute he is ready, he will be the starter.
There is that sense.
There is.
You know, if Harbaugh had not come back, I think Mike Tomlin would be my favorite NFL head coach. I just could hear him talk about football all day long. Speculation is a waste of time. He's so right.
He's right.
He's right.
He's excellent. And he won his opener. If they're all the people in the world badmouth them, and clearly they don't have one quarterback because they have two. I get all that, but he did win. You know why? Habit.
Habit.
It's what he does.
Winners win, and he looks every week as a season unto itself and treats it that way. No two are alike. He doesn't commit. He doesn't overcommit. He doesn't say things necessarily that make you say, what is he talking about?
Right.
He's just a football guy talking about football. Love it.
He's a really good football coach.
He is. Yep. So I think that keep an eye on Justin Fields and the Steelers, but Bears have their own problems. Texans are good. Very good. Is there a harder game? Is there a tougher team on the Bears schedule or a challenge than the Texans in Houston week 2 Sunday night?
Does any team in the NFL have a tougher?
No, I'm saying if you look at the Bears schedule.
Oh, for the Bears.
Yeah, the Bears. Okay. The challenge ahead of them Sunday night.
Well, they do have the fourth easiest, third easiest schedule in the NFL. Is that what you're
Well, yeah, I think. And also, obviously, later in the year, they've got the 49ers ahead on the schedule. You look down the road. But this, as a challenge to a young quarterback in Caleb Williams, who has not yet found his footing, going on the road in that environment against a playoff team like the Texans, might not get any tougher than it will be for the Bears on Sunday night.
Well, you know, it's fascinating because there is a link between the franchises, right? You go back and you think about how the Bears got to this point, the way they built up the team, the fact that Lovie Smith was coaching and it was the Texans when they won that game that gave the Bears the first overall pick, and the Bears trade that pick, and you look at all the things that have arrived as a result of that pick, and then meanwhile, because Carolina gave the Bears all these picks, the Bears feel they've improved a ton. Houston, because Carolina did the wrong thing with that pick. I don't think there's anybody that's questioning that.
No. No.
Taking the wrong quarterback. They feel in Houston they got the right one, and they feel like that has changed their fortunes. It's just amazing how sort of linked in a way the two franchises are by the ineptitude of Carolina.
Can you compare the Panthers to the White Sox again, please? That was beautiful yesterday.
Oh, God. That's so sad.
But you made the comparison, and it was pretty apt, actually.
Well, I hate to I
don't mean to bring you back down
I hate to bring
you there, but
I hate to do that to the fine people of Carolina.
Sox fans are thinking, do not compare us to that guy or those that team.
Yeah.
They're pretty bad. Inept is a good word. Mm-hmm. I think that this we need more time, and I think we should reserve maybe the top of the hour, maybe 7 o'clock, because the question that you posed that is not part of our pick six, but it will be part of our broader discussion.
Sure.
If you are the Bears,
yep.
would you prefer to have CJ Stroud, or would you prefer the haul that you got in the trade with the Panthers?
Including Caleb Williams.
Which includes Caleb Williams.
Right.
That big picture is the topic of the week in terms of looking at what the Texans are and what you want to become as a Bears franchise.
It didn't make the cut in our pick six.
Because it requires more than a 60-second answer.
I learned that apparently if somebody can't stumble through a 60-second answer, they won't include the question.
I wasn't bringing this to the air. I wanted
there was one yesterday. That, I don't know if it made the cut.
It made it to the extra point.
It did? Okay. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, there you go.
That's a tease.
So, but I just don't, but so if we're going to take the look behind the curtain, though.
So yesterday's question will then be tomorrow's pick.
Here's the thing. Some of these questions don't have shelf life. That question has a shelf life for today, tomorrow, and Friday.
And I agree with you, but I think it's a worthy discussion to begin on a Wednesday of game day.
Sure.
Because if it were me and if it were David and we were covering the beat, we'd have had that story in today's paper to be first to it, because everybody's going to be writing it as the week goes on. Correct?
And that's why 7 o'clock is a good time to open up that discussion in a bigger picture way.
That can of worms?
Yes, because it is, and I think you're exactly right.
Yep.
And that's the way we sort of look at things. Like, Wednesday's the beginning of game week, looking at the next opponent.
Right.
And when you compare teams, you compare organizations and where they are in the respective championship windows.
Our week no longer is one created by Pete Rozelle, but our week used to be one when we were covering football. And we were beat writers, both of us, at the same time and for a long time, covering the NFL. And that week was the Sunday game. That's the big day. Everybody gets ready for Sunday. The Monday postmortem. The day off where you got to take everything out of the notebook and get your week ready to go. Wednesday is the beginning of the buildup. That's game plan day, and that's when you talk to all the important players about the Sunday
game. And that's when you put aside last week's game.
That's when you put it aside. It's also when you get the opposing coaches, and you have a lot of buildup.
You look ahead.
You're looking ahead.
Hype.
Thursday, more of Wednesday.
Breakdown.
Get the big hype.
Reaction.
Friday,
injury report.
Injury report on Wednesday. Then the
unless
Thursday
you're Kyle Shanahan,
matters,
and then you wait till Monday
and then
night.
And you ruin everyone's fantasy team.
Okay, but you're right. Thursday, then Friday.
And then Friday is the final preparations, last chance to build up the game. And then it is the off day on Saturday, building up to the glory of Sunday. And that's a week that we lived for years.
Yes, and when you live that week for years, your brain starts to think that way and is conditioned to look ahead and to respond. And so I know that when we came in here this morning, we would be looking ahead and mentally comparing the Bears and the Texans. Not necessarily depth chart to depth chart. We can do that, but it's more interesting to us, I think, when you look at where are the Texans, where are the Bears. The Bears would like to be the Texans. How do they get there?
All right, we got a ton to get into. We're going to get into all of it. We're going to do that during the pick six, and then again at 7 o'clock with this question.
We're going to need a catchy thing at 7.
All right, we'll catch up. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 in the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Do what I do. Visit feelgreatillinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or their weight loss options. What did you think of the Japanese baseball showdown between Shota Imanaga and Yamamoto? Is there enough time for the Cubs to hold your interest by making this a run?
I think they're holding my interest. I don't know that they're going to make it a run. I would love to see that happen. I think it would just be so cool if we went into the final week of the season with uncertainty and it was sort of anyone's game. I would like their odds. I thought the Japanese baseball showdown was a great storyline. I thought it was wonderful to see both Yamamoto and Imanaga and to see Ohtani in that moment where they were all tipping caps. And I kept thinking, you know, we talked to Jed. He had just gotten back from Japan where he was out looking at this 22-year-old phenom who I'm sure the Dodgers are going to be after. All the Major League Baseball teams were at the workout or all after the guy. I just wonder, wouldn't it be great if the Cubs were to get that guy? I mean, I just think it would be super cool if you were able to sort of go after every top shelf guy and maybe add another pitcher that way, especially since you seem to be set up for success with Japanese players.
You got to figure it could be one of those teams.
Yeah.
One of those two teams are going to get them, right?
You would think they're both going to be in it. Why else would Jed have gone and looked at the kid? But I loved it. I thought it was just super cool, and I thought the very fact that the Cubs ended up coming back in the way they did. You know, they didn't just win that game. They came back and won it. And, you know, we've talked about how good they have been in Shota starts this year. And it was the same thing again. And I just, it is extraordinary to me. And I know we'll get into it and talk about it, how well they've been playing on the road versus at Wrigley and sort of all the things that we kind of talked about. We played some Craig Counsell about it yesterday, and then Happer had some things to say that we will listen to. So I find that a really fascinating subject. But man, I hope so. I hope they're in this thing. I wonder about it. I don't know that it's easy to say. Even, you know, you got to look at the number of weeks and the number of games always when you're looking at standings. And by virtue of just kind of the way you look at it, you need basically, if you're within a game a week, then you're in it, but they're not quite there right now.
So Yamamoto was also really special last night, and Yamamoto has not pitched in 3 months. So I just wonder if he would have been able to go what would have been a normal, if he would have went seven innings like Shota went, would the game have been different, right? If the Dodgers had played any defense, if Pete Crow Armstrong had left his glove at home, things could have been very different. But again, this is why they play the games. That's the, for those that like to say the beauty of baseball, this is the beauty of baseball. But I mean, Yamamoto striking out eight in just four innings of work, he threw 50 some odd pitches last night. 40 of some of them were for strikes. Guys, you know, the guy's got awesome control of the ball. Listen, they've got the Rockies next, right? I don't think Chris Bryant's playing. And if he is, he's not doing anything. So, I mean, there's a chance. There's always a chance until there's not. Until the mass says there's not, there's a chance.
I love that optimism. I don't disagree either. Last night was special, not only for baseball fans, but certainly for Japanese baseball fans. It was a showcase because, as I said, Suzuki has a big hit. You've got the matchup on the mound with Yamamoto and with Shota Imanaga. You had the moment with Shohei Ohtani, the tip of the cap, which was very, very cool. The Cubs got to feel like, as special as Yamamoto was last night and is overall, they've got to feel great about the return on their investment in Imanaga. 4 years, $53 million. That was the contract for Shota. Yamamoto last night pitching, first time in 3 months, 12 years, $325 million. The Cubs, as Dustin points out, 21-6 in Shota starts. That is a difference maker. That is ace-like stuff. He has been their ace this year. You got a tip of a cap to Shota because he's been that good. I loved it also because it was a preview of March 18th, next spring in Tokyo. Cubs and Dodgers, opening day. March 18th, opening day. Can you believe that? Last night was fun. I am getting a little bit swept away. They're pulling me back in. Four down with 17 to go. I do not want this season to end.
That's a great question.
What should we make of Bob Nightingale's report in the USA Today over the weekend that, quote, there is internal friction in the Cubs front office, end quote, but Jed Hoyer will return in 2025? Are those two things compatible? What do you suspect the source of any tension is?
I find this very intriguing because I never have believed that Jed Hoyer is in any kind of jeopardy job-wise. I just don't think that Tom Ricketts wants to make that move. I think they're more loyal to Jed than people might want them to be. And certainly we can criticize some of Jed's moves because they deserve it, that kind of scrutiny, that kind of criticism. But we also can compliment some of the moves that he has made, too. It's a mixed bag. It's never all great or all bad. But I do wonder where this is coming from. I don't think that Bob Nightingale is imagining this. I do wonder when he says front office friction, if it's a kind of creative tension that maybe Craig Counsell likes to lean into sometimes. He's not shy about admitting that. We've talked about that. I wonder where is this getting in the way? Is it getting in the way? Does the front office want to play players or use things or do things that Craig Counsell doesn't want to do? Have there been disagreements over what to do about the pitching staff? Drew Smyly, Hector Neris, other veterans that might have been placed on waivers. We had no idea. The Kyle Hendricks conundrum. I don't know, but it is interesting. Keep an eye on it. It's something to file away as a data point right now. Right now, all you're worried about is four back with 17 to go. But heading into the offseason, you want to remember this report because it wasn't created by a guy who is just known for creating things.
So this is really interesting. And if I remember it right, maybe I'm wrong. You guys can tell me. The texters can tell me. Callers can tell me. We heard Tom Ricketts say that Jed Hoyer came to him with the idea of Craig Counsell being available and we need to go get this guy and we need to dismiss somebody that Cubs fans and I think Tom Ricketts and his family really liked in David Ross. They also paid him about $2 million more dollars a year than anybody else was willing to pay him. And David Ross had the Cubs in a better position as a skipper than Craig Hember has them in right now. So maybe ownership is saying, what did we just do here? Because we paid this manager and then also cost-cutting on the scouting department, slashing their budget by firing four younger scouts. And Bruce brought it up and people laughed at it, but now, you know, getting rid of an interpreter. I'm just saying, like, the Cubs are, like, worried about money when they're charging $15 for a beer, when it's the most expensive experience in baseball. This is just very interesting. And maybe Tom Ricketts isn't happy that he was talked into firing David Ross, overpaying Craig Counsell, and this is where they're at.
Well, that's interesting, Dustin, because that's your takeaway from it. And I would be honest with you. I think that's spent money. I don't think you're allowed to have regrets about it now because it's over and it's done. And all the fretting you do isn't going to change the fact that you've given the guy the money and he's getting the money and he's going to make the money. So I don't think you can put that genie back in the bottle. I don't think that's what this is. If anything, if I was surmising, and it is just sort of a guess, but I would say there's an old adage in all of sports, which is don't hire your replacement. And I think that if there were tension as to what was going on. It would most likely be between the manager and the general manager or the team president. That the manager is a guy who once was in the front office, probably fancies himself pretty good at making baseball decisions, has come in here and done a decent job. They had a couple of bad months, I understand that, but he's got them kind of competing hard and looking better at the end of the year than they were at the beginning of the year, if you want to accept that or not. And I think that he may also have ideas about what the players he needs are, who the players he wants are, how you do this sort of thing. And you don't know. I don't know what the answers are, but I would think that it is more likely to be something with the makeup of the team and how you're putting it together and what you're doing, as David pointed out, with the pitching staff, with particularly the bullpen and some pieces, by all accounts, really like Drew Smyly. Drew Smyly, everyone finds out, is on waivers. He's not left the team. He's still there, but we don't know how happy everyone is about that. I think that is more likely the cause of concern than Tom Ricketts looking back and questioning money spent.
I agree, Dustin. I think with all due respect, you're projecting. I don't think anybody misses David Ross as much as you miss David Ross.
And I don't. Are you sure about that?
Yes. No. Okay. No. I'm never sure about anything. Look, I just don't think that it's an educated guess. It's informed speculation. I don't think that Craig Counsell is the reason why Tom Ricketts might be upset. I think that Craig Counsell, it's hard to pin much of anything on him this year.
Well, and Drew Smyly also, right? Potentially a money thing.
Well, that's a different thing. I think
it's money. I think, in my opinion, is the root of this problem.
Okay.
It's a good question.
The Bears' offensive tackles appear to be headed to the sort of a test and scrutiny in week two that the interior of the O-line failed in week number one. Do you fear the possibility the poor construction of the offensive line will ruin Caleb Williams' rookie season? Were they just unprepared to start the season, or is this a year-long storyline?
Oh, that's really interesting. I think it is a year-long storyline. I think that until you know who the offensive line starters are, you don't know everything you need to know, and you don't have the certainty that you need to have for an NFL season. I think that it is not poor roster construction as much as it is. No, maybe it was poor roster construction to bring in a guy who you're currently seemingly replacing in Nate Davis. Maybe that was a bad decision. But I don't know that. I think the problem is too many guys were unprepared for the start of the season, and we saw that in game one, that you just had a lot of guys in and out of the lineup in the preseason. You didn't have a lot of offensive linemen working together. You had guys in and out of the lineup. Seemed like you had no Nate Davis, and then Nate Davis gets back, and you got no Ryan Bates, and now Bates is back, and those two guys are competing for a job, and you never got a chance to have really Shelton and Bates going at it over the center position. So you didn't really have the competition you wanted for that job. And then meanwhile, Tevin Jenkins didn't have a great outing. I don't know if he was prepared for the start of the season. You had some problems with Braxton Jones when you went back and looked at that game. I just think that this particular challenge this week isn't necessarily along the interior of the offensive line as much as it is on the outside and stopping their pass rights, the different construction of a defense and a different way of looking at where their star players are. And I hope that we come away thinking, wow, they did a really good job with Braxton Jones, and now I know why Mercedes Lewis is on this team, and the second year man is holding his own on the other side. I hope that is the takeaway this week, but it is a different challenge, and the offensive line, whenever it's under scrutiny, we go back to things like how they're not playing together and how individually these aren't good players. An offensive line can succeed when you have five guys and they're playing like one, and they're playing and they're helping each other and they're able to support each other. We didn't see that in week one. And certainly the problem was on the interior. And in week two, the challenge is on the outside of the line more so than the inside. But I would imagine after looking at that tape, there'll be some challenges inside as well. I'd be moving guys around that line and trying to line up.
The second-year guy, Darnell Wright, actually graded out awfully, awfully well, according to Pro Football Focus, in regards to pass blocking. He had a great day, according to them, pass blocking. Now, run blocking, not so much. Not very good when they had the tackle in motion, but that's a whole another story. Listen, every week, it's a storyline. The storyline, as you point out, the storyline is going to continue, right? Because the focus right now is really more on the inside of the Bears' offensive line than the quarterback's play. I think people are letting Caleb off the hook potentially a little bit, blaming up front for the reason. Okay, let's see what happens with this whole group in week number two. Big jump, national TV, lots of eyes on it. As you point out, Molly, Texans, really good pass rush from the outside. We're going to find out, and I think they might want to use two tight ends quite a bit.
It surprises me that we are in year three of the Ryan Poles regime, and we are still regularly speaking about the inconsistency of the offensive line and questioning its construction. It shouldn't be that way, and yet it is. I think there are a lot of reasons for that. Nate Davis underperforming. They threw money at the position. Ryan Bates and Coleman Shelton weren't cheap. They aren't playing for the veterans minimum. But I think that when you invest in guys, that you expect them to play at a certain level. And the interior line, based on week one and based on what we have seen, has been disappointing. The tackles, Braxton Jones, he is who he is. Darnell Wright, you're right, Dustin. He looked like he's a ninth overall pick. He's a 10th overall pick. Whatever he was, he's a first-round pick. You should be able to win with that. I hope this isn't a season-long storyline. If it is, we're going to have to revisit this at some point. Roma Dunze is great. How many 15 jerseys out there were all over Soldier Field? He's a popular guy. They're going to miss him if he doesn't play on Sunday night. You love him with his chemistry with Caleb Williams. But then you remember, if offensive line continues to be a problem, they chose a wide receiver at 9 instead of an offensive tackle. An offensive tackle is their former offensive tackle as their general manager. His assistant is a former offensive tackle. And yet they went wide receiver. If this continues to be a problem that gets in the way of Caleb Williams' development after giving him all the wide receivers he could want, then that's a broader discussion.
He left. He's upset.
No, not leaving. Nobody's that lucky. The Bears tried out a kick return specialist, David Wallace, on Tuesday. Wallace, 28.9 yards per return during the preseason with a long of 53. Could this be bad news for Velus Jones, Mully's guy?
Yeah, it could be. This is a message. I don't know why you would need to send a message. Let me strike that from the record. This is not a message.
Mm-hmm.
This is a response. This is a response that is a very understandable response. I hope that they're done sending messages. That's what they don't. You don't interpret this as a message. I'm sorry for even leading us down that path. This is a response, and this is what happens when you don't perform on an NFL roster. You risk getting replaced by someone who can do the job that you have squandered, and you can't do the job. So I don't even know much about David Wallace, but I know he had a 29-yard average in preseason in an NFL camp in NFL preseason games. And you also have a guy who kicked the ball around like a soccer player on Sunday when he was trying to return a kick for you. So yes, this is a more response than message. And if Velus Jones is cut, nobody's going to miss him.
But don't just have DeAndre Carter do it. Stop screwing around.
That's not it. I mean, honestly, think about it. He's the punt returner, so you're going to have him as the kick returner. Now you got him doing both jobs. Let's say he trips. Let's say he has an ingrown toenail.
Okay, bring in David Wallace.
Well, I think they're looking for they didn't sign him, right? This is what you do when you're down to one returner, kind of, don't you think? I mean, isn't it sort of due diligence to look at a guy that's on the street and make sure that you know who he is and whether you...
Sure, due diligence. Yeah, I think you're right. Due diligence. I think it would be an overreaction to cut Velus Jones at this point. I would be shocked. The fact they gave him the ball, the fact that we've got the coach talking about how proud he is of the guy, and then they would cut him for a guy like literally off the street, that would be surprising.
Yeah, I mean, they're proud of Velus Jones for coming back from that horrible fumble that was so costly in the game. I don't think they're going to cut him, but I do think he's not going to be active this week. I wouldn't have him active this week because I don't trust him in that role. And if I don't trust him in that role, and you're right, they got another guy that had a 66-yard kickoff return and can be a punt returner and is good at what he does, and they won't miss a beat. But you got to make sure you know who's out there and who's available. And, you know, if they do sign this guy, then Velus has to go. I don't think there's any hesitation about that. But, yes, to answer the question, he's under threat because of his performance in week one. But I don't think they will cut him after going to the lengths they did to make sure he made the team.
Okay, next question.
That's Ozzie. We're going to get his takes on what Chris Getz said at 8 o'clock. What's your take on the fact that Michael Kopech has been one of the best trade acquisitions in MLB during his time with the Dodgers? Does seeing him with a 0.53 ARA with the Dodgers allowing just 5 hits, 1 earned run, 17 innings of work, 21 Ks in those 17 innings, and just 4 walks going into last night's meeting with the Cubs make you wonder if the Northsiders should have made a play for him? Would the Sox have traded him to the Cubs, and do you wish they had?
I think they might have gotten more out of the trade had they traded him to the Cubs. Had they not packaged him up to get rid of him, I felt like they tried a lot with Michael Kopech, and even with the immaculate inning, I felt like there was no future for him on the South Side. I also felt that he was a guy that you should take a chance on, and we talked about that idea. I saw that Ed Howard got promoted to AAA. Why wouldn't you want, if you were the White Sox, why wouldn't you want Ed Howard in your organization when he was, you know, grew up in the Sox organization, etc.? You don't take him. You take Crochet, who you're going to trade. Wouldn't that be wise for them to ask for something like that?
Why did they pass on Alec Thomas? Those are good questions.
Right. But I'm just saying, if you could have gotten anything from the Cubs, I don't think they were going to give up one of their top 100 players, and I don't think that would have been the requirement. But if you could have gotten something from them, they have a lot of players. Ed Howard's an example of a guy that was viewed in one way and now kind of is waiting and slowly coming back into the picture. So if you could have gotten someone like him, wouldn't you do that trade in a heartbeat? And wouldn't that help the Cubs a ton? Would the tension in the front office and with the manager, would that exist if you had a guy that was a knockdown closer, able to do some special stuff? I don't think so.
Well, if there was one guy that I was a fan of over at 35th and Shields, it was Michael Kopech. He had a bad year over there, but who's having a good year over there? I thought a change of scenery would do him good, but listen, Chris Getz won't trade within the division. He's sure as heck not going to trade within the city. So I don't even think that was possible. I don't think that the boss, the chairman, wants to do business with the Cubs in any way, shape, or form. So it might have worked, you know, but that might not have been a big enough move. Maybe he needed to literally, you know, be thousands of miles away from where his career started to get everything straightened out for him. And good for him. Congrats. I'm glad he's using all the God-given talent and putting it to good use.
Michael Kopech is a symbol of the White Sox failure to develop players in their system. And there's no way that if the Sox, I don't think they were going to trade him to the Cubs unless that was the only team interested. And I don't think that they were, clearly. And I do wonder if the change of scenery, picking up and leaving, going west, something about LA, something about the Dodger uniform, that environment brings out the best in guys. And it certainly has helped Michael Kopech rise to the occasion. I do wonder, I'm very curious to know, maybe throughout the postseason, we'll learn more about this, but Mark Pryor's input and impact on Michael Kopech's resurgence. This is a guy in Kopech who has always had the talent and had a difficult time harnessing it. He's reaching his potential in LA. It's great to see. Everybody in Chicago should be happy for the young man realizing this potential, which is enormous. I would love to see him on the mound in meaningful moments in October. I'd love to see him part of a World Series team. If the Dodgers are in there and the Cubs are out, I will be rooting for the Dodgers, in large part because it's fun to see this guy succeed even though he represents so much about what went wrong on the South Side, I don't think you hold that against him. I think you're cheering for him, and he's an easy guy to support.
The last question will be...
That is Stacey Dale. She's here at 9. And were you bummed to see Angel Reese is out for the season with a broken wrist? Does that mean her Roy, Rookie of the Year dreams, are also over, or did they end some time ago? Will the Sky and the WNBA suffer any kind of drop-off without her, and can the Sky make the WNBA playoffs without Angel Reese?
Not sure about the playoff run. Probably compromised and unlikely. Angel Reese going out early and announcing it before the Sky actually got around to confirming it was an interesting dissemination of information, but you wish her well. It's too bad that she left early. I don't think that she was going to be Rookie of the Year if healthy. That's Caitlin Clark's award, and I think Caitlin Clark will get MVP consideration. I don't know much about who else in the Sky in the Sky's world will be keeping them out of the playoffs. I don't know what teams they have to pass, but they will drop off in terms of interest, in terms of maybe attendance. There are a lot of people that went out to Wintrust Arena just to see Angel Reese, and now they can't. So let's hope she has a full recovery.
I hope everything works out well, but just to stay on point, I mean, she had
keeping it real, Dustin.
Optional wrist surgery because doctors told her that without the surgery, she could potentially have arthritis. She wasn't going to have arthritis at 22. And the way, David, she delivered it, she told the world before the Sky told the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. Okay, I don't think the WNBA, from a rating standpoint, is going to miss a beat. Now, it would be good for the Sky to be in the WNBA postseason. There's no doubt about that. The Sky are better when Angel Reese is on the court. There's no doubt about that. But she had no shot ever of being the Rookie of the Year. None. Zero.
Yeah, I think she was kind of in the running for Rookie of the Year. I think that streak of double-doubles went on a very long time, and I think people appreciated that. I think that what's happened for the Sky is that, you know, Kennedy Carter has come back as Angel Reese is going out. She had been ill, and that was one of the reasons they went through kind of that long stretch where they were losing. They have a 7-game losing streak. I think that coincided with Kennedy Carter not being there to score points, and I think they've struggled to score points. And I mean, you know, Caitlin Clark is by far the leader and will be the Rookie of the Year, and David is right. There will be consideration. She's probably in the top five for the MVP award, but I don't think that's in the cards for her. I do think that they may be able to make a playoff run. It doesn't take a lot to get into the playoffs. They're in contention. I believe they're in the playoffs right now. And I think that, you know, Camila Cardoso was missing earlier in the year, and she can hopefully pick up some of the rebounding that you miss and some of the kind of, you know, kind of gritty underneath plays. If she can do that, and with Carter scoring, they may yet make the playoffs. But it's a pity that Angel Reese is out, and she had a wildly successful rookie year. And I think that their future looks bright, and the Sky probably needs more 3-point shooting. And if they can get that in the offseason, they'd be a more balanced, better team from what I've seen. All right, we've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands.
thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's Extra Point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What did you make of Tom Brady's debut as a broadcaster? What do you imagine Tom thought about it and the criticism that followed? How does Fox Sports feel about signing him to a 10-year, $375 million deal?
I can't imagine they feel great about the investment yet. I also think that if you're willing to make that kind of investment into Tom Brady, who's known, refers to himself, I think he leans into the GOAT designation, you know that it's going to come with growing pains and this kind of controversy, many controversy, and you know that it's all worth it in your mind because he is his own brand and you're investing in his name, value, and reach. They have promoted him in a way that makes it almost impossible for him to meet those expectations. They trotted him out on Saturday during the Michigan game. I just think he looks and sounds a little bit uncomfortable. I don't want to jump to conclusions and overreact to one game, especially his first one in the booth, at least the one that we have seen live. He's done other things in practice that have been off the air. So I'm willing to give him a little grace here. It wasn't a great debut because we're comparing it to what we last saw in the Fox booth. I'm a big Greg Olsen fan. A lot of people are. And I don't think that's a fair comparison, even though I've done it myself. Tom Brady, I think, understands the game in a way that's unique. So if he can find a way to articulate what's in his head and do it quickly in a way that is digestible and understandable and smooth, all things that he's getting paid handsomely to do, I think will be okay. Obviously, he's an easy target. He's got this job because of the way he was as a quarterback, and he's got all the rings that he's very happily posing with, wearing. I think in terms of his own approach and his own, I think, relatability, if he could just relax. And I think they need to just treat him like a normal broadcaster. He is not a normal broadcaster. But this putting him ahead of the game on Sunday was a mistake by Fox. It was like Tom Brady is announcing this game, and oh, by the way, the Cowboys and the Browns are playing too. They didn't do him any favors by building it up that way. I understand that's the way television works. But one game was not impressive. This was his Caleb Williams opener. You know, Caleb Williams was not the quarterback that he will become, and Tom Brady certainly wasn't the broadcaster that he'll become. In both cases, I think we got to be patient.
Well, Caleb Williams may not get nervous, but Tom Brady was clearly nervous, in my opinion. I remember when Troy Aikman started doing this job. I didn't think Troy Aikman was very good at the job. Troy Aikman grew into the job and has gotten very, very good at the job. I think Tom Brady will get better. It's kind of like how bad quarterback play was in week one of the NFL season. Like, Tom Brady's got no reps. He took some reps off the air. They didn't. This is their first live broadcast. And again, you know, when you give somebody $375 million for 10 years, whether you can't take it back, this is the 375, his broadcasting is like one tenth of what he's doing for Fox. They're not worried about it. People aren't going to, people don't tune in for broadcasters. They tune in for games. They really do at the end of the day. I think he was over scrutinized. I watched most of that game, not all of it. I thought he was okay. It was okay. It was a bad game. Game wasn't very good, unless you're a Cowboys fan.
Man, I don't know if Tom Brady was comfortable. I know I was uncomfortable, man. I mean, I got to tell you, like, you want him to succeed, but it was like from the minute he came on, and I went back and watched the beginning of it because I was working when it was going on, and I just wanted to kind of get a feel for him in the booth kind of thing. Oh, I mean, he was totally uncomfortable. It was like his self-awareness was painful. Like his, you know, it wasn't a guy broadcasting a game. It was Tom Brady trying to talk to people. And it was like he was tense. And someone said he was overprepared. I don't know how that works, that you're too prepared, so you're no good. I just don't know what that means. He wasn't natural. I gotta tell you, it was that's what was missing. Like Tony Romo from the first game he did, he was just Tony Romo talking about quarterbacking. I thought that's what Tom was there for. And it was more like, oh, I don't know, man.
He was stiff.
He was stiff as a board. He and Kevin Burkhardt had no chemistry at all. It was nothing. It was that the worst thing you can be is self-conscious when you're doing something where you're kind of aware. It was like going to a wedding and the guy gets up to give the best man speech and he says, well, you know, I don't usually talk in front of people, so
right.
Oh my God, that's how it felt.
And you're braced for the worst.
Oh, exactly.
And
don't mention it.
Just stop talking. You know,
the poor player who struts and frets his moment on stage and then is heard of no more. You don't be self-aware while you're trying to act. It's a painful thing to see. It wasn't as natural as I expected.
You're right. And along those lines, I don't think Fox did him any favors. And I understand how the promotion business works, but they built him up. His arrival. Tom Brady is here. There's Tom Brady walking into the building. Oh my gosh, give it a rest. Let him be natural.
Tom Brady could have gone in a number of different ways, but you're right. They set him up kind of that what he said was going to be, and then Tom spoke from the mountaintop, and he said,
I'm proclaiming the quarterback through to the wrong receiver.
The Cleveland quarterback didn't see that one. Oh my God! He said that one.
It was so bland.
And he was just like, "Oh my God!"
Yeah,
it was. David, and you're right. I don't know what I want from him or what I just expected. He was such a natural as a player, and everything seemed to come so effortless to him. The fact that he was very aware of what he was doing. And then the other thing was he was getting killed like almost immediately on
social
Twitter.
Media.
So you're just kind of like, oh God, yeah. I hope no one sees this. And it felt like every time they broke to someone, they were like, oh, Tom Brady is there. Look at Tom. They like everyone had to be. Tom said you called a good play. Like it was just, oh my God, it was so tough.
Yeah, he performed like a sixth round draft pick.
And you know what? He was one, and that's why you don't judge him until you give him some time. But it's going to be now he's in a hole. And he's got to kind of climb out of it. It's just unfortunate. I just thought it'd be smoother. It was just shocking that he was so self-aware. All right, 312-644-6767. Someone said Tom used to broadcast it with Velus Jones is returning.
Oh man, that's harsh.
Get a hold of the ball first, son.
Joe O is next.
Yes, we'll talk to our guy Joe O. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Money, 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 money.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always a delight to talk to our guy, Joe Ostrowski. He's with BetQL, and Joe joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. And Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Joseph, good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning, guys. Doing great. So many different ways that we can go. You let me know. Where do you want to start?
Well, we obviously only care about the Bears.
Bears.
And I'm just curious that we saw the line. It's I believe it came out at 6.5. I don't know. You tell us if it's moving. But I don't think the line was going to be 6.5. It's almost like as Vegas watched the game, they were like, oh, boy, better give them some more points.
Here's what's funny, guys. So I'm watching the late afternoon games knowing, okay, the odds are going to come out pretty soon. I can't wait to see what they put this Bears-Texans number at. Because the Texans, they did not cover. They went a close game, put up a bunch of points against the Colts. And we know how the Bears won. And just knowing how the betting market goes, I know how they're going to react to the Bears. They're going to react in a negative fashion because they're going to view it as very fluky. So actually, it opened at 3.5. And I'm like, what? What? 3.5? What am I looking wrong? Am I looking at only the first half? And I double, triple checked, and it was 3.5. Obviously, that did not last very long. As you mentioned, it's 6.5. Some spots are already up at 7. So massive movement in favor of the Texans. A little bit of anti-Bears. But I would say, though, there are a couple of other interesting things around the Bears that with this Jordan Love injury, they're now the second favorite for the division.
Yeah, wow. You
know, it's Detroit, the heavy favorite, and Green Bay and Minnesota are both 6-1. So not a huge movement in the odds, but the Bears are that second team listed. Caleb is still the favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year, but Jaden Daniels' number came way down. He was 6-1. It's more like +350 right now. Based on what we saw week one, the Commanders' defense is still awful. He's going to have a lot of garbage time to put up some numbers. And he had two rushing touchdowns. So by the end of the year, if Daniel stays healthy, this could be a pretty good two-player race.
Week two starts tomorrow night, Joe. I wondered in terms of trends emerging from week one on the field, some poor quarterback play across the league. It's good to be a kicker because now they're kicking from 50 and beyond. But betting-wise, were there any trends that emerged from week one?
Well, what I would say is look at the overreaction. That's just it. You could say, I don't know if it was an overreaction or the correct reaction, but that's what I'm looking at. These numbers that opened or the numbers that were posted a week ago, okay, you do all this handicapping, you do all these studying on all these teams, and then after 60 minutes of football, people are like, whoa, no, that was all wrong. Well, maybe you were more right than you thought. And here are some examples of some big-time line movement. I think that's really key this week. Chargers fading the Panthers. This thing went from 3.5 to 6.5. The Chargers are a 6.5-point road favorite. This is a team that many people were saying, Harbaugh's got kind of a free year. He's just going to figure things out. He's kind of starting over. Well, they're a 6.5-point road favorite because it looks like things have not really changed much for the Panthers. The Rams go from a 2-point favorite to a 1-point dog. Pay attention to some of these cluster injuries. It's already happening, guys. Tampa Bay, they've got 4 DBs injured right now. And the Rams, it looks like they have one healthy starting offensive lineman in addition to Puka. Yeah. So that's why it flipped to Arizona being the favorite there. And the Green Bay one was massive. Jordan Love out. So it goes from the Packers, a 5-point favorite at Lambeau against the Colts, to now the Colts are favored by 4. Jordan Love is not worth 9 points to the spread. He's not. So, I mean, that is the perfect example of an overreaction. And part of it is people look at Willis and say, well, it's not a quarterback playing the position. So they're just going to bet on the Colts no matter what.
People look at him and say, what you doing, Willis? Joe, I this blew my mind when I heard this, that the Circa Survivor Pool was almost cut in half following week one. Oh my God. Is that the Bengals? What is that?
Yeah. I don't want to do a told you so, but for 2 weeks, myself and my partner, Sam Panionovich on the show, we were begging people, do not take Cincinnati. They are never ready early in the season.
Yeah.
I know it's the biggest point spread. Don't take the Bengals, whatever you do. They have an easy schedule. There's going to be other opportunities. But yeah, it's mostly the Bengals. So 5,564 people were kicked out in week one.
Man.
That is more than 39% of the pool. It's unbelievable. Guys, they were hoping, okay, we're going to announce a 10 million guarantee. That means 10,000 entries, right? They got 14,000 entries. There's $14 million in this pot now because there's no rake over at Circa. I don't know how this happened. 45 of those out didn't make a pick.
Oh my!
How does that happen,
God, that's
Joe?
Unbelievable.
They paid $1,000
and forgot
and never made a pick. I saw Derek Stevens talking about it yesterday. Wow. He said a couple of those scenarios, the people bought 10 spots. They put down 10 G's and they never got their pick in on time.
That's crazy.
I know.
Joe, have a great show with Sam. Give him our best.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
That is our guy, Joe Ostrowski. Always fun to talk to him.
How do you spend that money without making a bet?
I wouldn't know. Because if I had spent that kind of money, it would be my mission.
You would change your mind 17 times.
Well, no question.
And then make a – but you wouldn't you wouldn't forget to do it.
Oh, I would definitely make that. Yeah. I would go through a living hell. Yeah, I agree with you.
And then on the 18th time, you would write it in, and then you'd hand it in, and then you would regret it the rest of the day.
You know me well. I do. I do live that way. But man, I would definitely make the pick. That's crazy.
It is crazy.
I feel bad because I know I have some friends who were taking the Bengals. And
Bengals killed a lot of people's hopes.
Dangerous.
Cost people a lot of money. Hey, when we come back, we're going to have that conversation.
Yes.
About the trade the Bears made with the Panthers and the fact that you're going to weigh what they got for that against C.J. Stroud.
And don't forget, they've got the Panthers' number 2 pick this year, which looks like it's number 33 overall.
Right.
It's basically a late first-round pick. Mully and Haw on the score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.